to 10.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
We're visiting with former Congressman Orvin Fiore at his home in Helena. Congressman Fiore represented, I believe, the 2nd District of Montana from 1952 to 54. Is that right?
It was elected in 54.
From 54 to 56.
Six, correct.
From 54 to 56. Congressman Fiore, what got you interested in politics? You were first elected as a relatively young man. What motivated you to become interested in politics and to run for Congress?
Well, after the war, I returned to Big Timber, where it's my home, and was in the clothing business with my father-in-law, intending to stay there perhaps for the rest of my life. And then in the late, about 49 or 50, Big Timber chartered a chapter of the Junior Chamber of Commerce, and I became its charter president. That would be about 1949, maybe 50. And I became, as I say, its charter president, and eventually state president. And in 1953, was elected a national vice president of the Junior Chamber of Commerce. And I became interested particularly in Americanism and in government, and made quite a few speeches in that direction. And I remember even early in 53, I was on a speaking tour in the Midwest in Albuquerque, in Des Moines, Iowa. And up until that time, several people had suggested that I should perhaps practice a little bit more of what I preached and run for public office. The only public office I'd ever attempted was to be elected to the school board in Big Timber, that being about the mid-40s. And early in 1953, it became little hints here and there would be heard. And finally, I got a call from Al Wilkinson, who was at that time the Republican whip, you might say, or representative for the Anaconda Copper Company, and asked if I would attend a meeting to be held in Bozeman on such and such a date in the Rainbow Hotel there. And I agreed to be present. And during the course of the meeting, they convinced me that I thought I could and should be a candidate for Congress. The reason that I was asked for or even hinted for was that then Congressman Wes Dewart had decided on behalf of the party and other influential groups that he should run against Senator Murray, which he agreed to do, and that left it vacant. So I was 36 years old. I must admit, naive and very idealistic, and of course very flattered that people of this importance would even suggest or consider that I would be. So I thought that it might be an interesting turn in my life. The Junior Chamber of Commerce meant a great deal to me, and I would like to have been, and I think I could have been, the national president. But I was 1 year too old. I was 36, and when you're that way, you're out of the running. So I agreed that I would give it a try. There were four others who also thought they would like to be. There was Charlie Mahoney from Jordan. I can't remember the attorney's name up in Malta. And an attorney from Bozeman, and one of there was five of us in the primary.
Were any of these other fellows involved in this same meeting that Al Wilkinson invited
you
to?
No, none of them.
So you felt perhaps you had some support from that group.
Exactly. I was the chosen one, you might say.
Do you remember any other people that might have been at that meeting?
Well, there were, but I don't remember from the Montana Power Company. I don't remember who, but I remember, never forget, Al Wilkerson, very, very imposing, important-looking man. So I remember I was at the National Convention in Colorado Springs at the Junior Chamber, outgoing as a national vice president, and the Montana Power Company sent an airplane down to pick me up to bring me back. This would be in early in June to get active in the primaries. So that's basically how I got involved into Republican politics and running for Congress in specific.
Did the Montana Power Company and the Anaconda Company have kind of a network that helped you?
Yes, they did. I learned later. All of this I learned much later. So we ran and
who was your opponent? Who was your opponent? Who was the Democratic nominee in 1954?
His name was Leroy Anderson from Conrad, Montana.
So you ran against him twice?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I
beat him the first time.
Beat him the first time, he beat me the second time. Right. So that's what got me involved.
Now, when you served in Congress, you served with Gerald Ford.
With who?
Gerald Ford.
Oh, yes, Gerald Ford, right.
What do you remember about him?
Oh, of course, he was a very good, close friend. Gerald Ford and I were very close, along with some others, and perhaps most important ones, Dick Nixon, who was then he at that time was vice president with Eisenhower, right.
But you were personally well acquainted with both Ford and Nixon.
Oh, yes, on a first-name basis, yes, indeed, right.
Did you serve on a committee with Ford?
No. No, I served on the House Committee on Education and Labor. That's the only committee I was on as a freshman congressman, yeah.
Is there an issue or an incident or anything that you were involved with as a congressman that you particularly remember?
Oh, well, that's a little difficult.
There were many, I know.
There were many, and of course those were the placid years of Eisenhower. I think probably the most important piece of legislation that was even considered during those 2 years of that time was the passing of the National Interstate Highway Bill, and that of course affected the entire United States and a lot of Montana. And of course I was the only Republican in the delegation. There was Mansfield, Murray, and Metcalf. Murray and Mansfield had sent it, and Metcalf was the other congressman at that time. And of course amongst other things, all of the postmasters at that time served at the pleasure of the president. So whenever there was a change of party for president, all of the postmasters in the country would change parties. So, and being the only Republican in Montana, all the postmasterships of this whole state of Montana were handled by my office. So that was kept me busy. Not only that, but Indian affairs, of all the Indian affairs, there were seven of them, and there still is, Indian affairs went through our office.
Did you ever meet Sam Rayburn?
Oh, Sam Rayburn?
Yes.
He's probably one of the most effective people that I've ever known in my life. I noticed that they wanted to know who the people were that I remember the most. And Sam Rayburn, who was then Speaker, was far and away the most impressive member of Congress that I can recall.
What was memorable and impressive about him?
Well, and also like he, as Senator Mansfield was a very important person. And they were people that you had to respect, even though they were from the other party, you had to respect them for their knowledge and their diplomacy and their honesty almost to a fault, and that I admired. You know.
And both Rayburn and Mansfield were very honest men. Both Mansfield and Rayburn were very honest men from
correct,
your experience.
Correct, right, right.
And then you also had a working relationship with Murray and Metcalf?
Well, we had as good a relationship as you could have under the circumstances, yeah.
And Murray was, how would you characterize him? How would you characterize Murray?
Well, he was a hard man to know. He was a very partisan man. Speaking of the interstate system, in almost every state, not all, but almost every state, and it was a practice or a hopeful thing that the interstates would cross one another, north and south and east and west, at the capital of other states. And that's almost true in almost every case, even in Wyoming, where Cheyenne is on the southern border, the two east and west interstates cross at Cheyenne. Not in Montana, they don't cross in Helena, they must in Butte. Senator Murray was chairman of that committee, and that's why it went to Butte.
I see.
Right.
How about Metcalf? Did you have any workings with him?
Not too close. He and I were didn't agree on very many things, and we didn't work very close. But I worked with Mansfield closely, but not Metcalf.
Now, Congressman Fiore, one thing that's been mentioned to me to ask you about is the Yellowtail Dam issue.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a lot of people think that's for my demise as a congressman occurred, and it's very likely true, amongst other things. But the Yellowtail Dam was authorized earlier, in the early 50s it was authorized, but never funded. And while I was in Congress, Congress got around to the point to where they were going to not only authorize it, but to fund it. And amongst other things, the proposal was that the Crow tribe on which Yellowtail Dam would be built would be compensated at the amount of $2.5 million for the dam site, just where the building would be built. Well, Metcalf, Murray, and Mansfield, and others in the Democratic Party, including the Chamber of Commerce of Billings and Hardin and Yellowstone, all decided that the Crow should be paid $5 million. And I even supported that, by a letter early on, which was used against me later. But later on, it occurred to me through recommendations of the Interior Department and the President, Eisenhower himself, that $5 million was in excess of what it would be normally paid. It would set a bad precedent and so forth. And on the convincing of the Interior Department and the President, I reversed myself and became known as that I recommended it be $2.5 million rather than $5 million.
Did I contact you personally about this?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He talked to you about it or wrote you a letter? Or
how's that?
Did he talk to you about it or write you a letter? Or
who, the President?
Yes.
No, but the committee chairman did. I mean, of the Interior Department.
Yeah. The Secretary of Interior.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
On behalf of the President?
Correct.
Yeah.
So I then came out for $250. Well, the Chamber of Commerce and Buildings didn't like that at all, and that's understandable. But I mean,
they wanted the tribe to have more money that they thought would be spent in Billings.
They knew it would. Yeah.
Yeah.
If they'd have got the $5 million, the used car dealers and the liquor dealers would have had it in 10 days. With $2.5 million, they'd only give them 5 days. But that was so. That was the big problem of the Yellowtail Dam. And eventually, of course, they won it, and eventually they did fund it at $2.5 million rather than the five, because of, but they'd got the job done. One other great...
But But and so the your opponents were able to use that as an issue against you?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But it seems like most people in Montana would think that the value of the property wasn't worth $5 million,
well,
and they would agree
think
with you.
That, but it was a close race, and I say if it hadn't been for that, we would have won it all right, because of the Chamber of Commerce in Yellowstone County, which was a strong Republican county, went for it. And then the other thing, and equally important, but perhaps is not well known, is that, let me go right to the beginning now. When I was first elected as a congressman, the Anaconda Company and the Montana Power Companies were very helpful in trying to get me off on the right step. And amongst other things, and I've never told this to very, very many people, and it's about time it was told. The Anaconda Company particularly recommended that I have as a member of my staff a lady by the name of Molly Cromwell. She was with Congressman Dewart's office. Very capable person, very knowledgeable, and been in Washington for years, from Cascade, Montana. And I was very pleased and very impressed that they would try to help me out to be properly staffed. So she became a member of my staff. And then, of course, I had my other people, about six other people. And early on in 56, I began to get very uncomfortable with her. Her loyalty to me as a staff member became a doubt. And I became convinced that she was a plant. She was there at the will and the pleasure of the Anaconda Company. She was reporting to them. In other words, she was the inside person. Well, I couldn't handle that. I just could not tolerate. I had to have complete loyalty to me, and I wasn't there. So I dismissed her.
Did she know why?
You bet your life she told why. I told her why. And up until that time, frequently, perhaps as often as once a month, Sigrid and I and my administrative assistant would be invited to the Shoreham Hotel for a beautiful dinner and entertainment, the best table in the house at the expense of the Anaconda and Montana Power Company. Well, when I dismissed this lady, that was the end of that association. I never heard from them anymore. So I was right.
Do you think there might have been an issue? I mean, what caused you to have your doubts about her?
Oh, not really an issue, but I just knew that she was not loyal to me. She was loyal to somebody else. And I was right. That was the end of our close association.
But did you have a difference of opinion on some matter or something or other with the Anaconda Company that she was going behind your back to them for?
No. I just knew that she was working for somebody else. I've never told this to anybody else. You're the first.
And so when the dinner invitation stopped, you got the impression that perhaps the Anaconda Company wasn't as supportive of you.
Exactly.
And so when you ran for re-election in 1956, you had also reason to believe that was the case?
Exactly.
Did you notice that the business community was less supportive of you in 56?
Yes, that's right. Oh, yes. No question.
And they were helping Leroy Anderson?
Yep.
Or just not helping you?
Just not helping me.
Yeah.
Right. And, of course, the same thing came to light in 1960 when I ran for the Senate. I still have the honor of being of all the Republican candidates for the United States Senate in the state of Montana, I hold the honor of coming closest to being elected. Two of them were elected, but I still become closest to being elected with less than 5,000 votes in 60, and that was primarily because of the non-support of Anaconda Company primarily, and partially the Yellowstone Company, I mean the Montana Power Company. Montana Power Company was interested in having Yellowtail Dam built because of they purchased power. And they were practical in politics. I was too young, too inexperienced to try to be a statesman before I learned how to be a politician. That's exactly right now. If I had learned how to be a politician a little bit first, the $5 million thing, I just kept my mouth shut. Just forget it. I'd have been swept in. But I had to...
But the dam was built anyway, wasn't it?
Oh, sure.
It was just a question of building it economically or uneconomically.
Exactly. And exactly the way that we proposed in the first place.
Well, I'm glad you did what you did.
Yeah. Well, I am too. I can sleep pretty well.
How important was the Montana Farmers Union in politics in the 1950s?
Extremely important. I mean, not only the Farmers Union, but all the other unions. In 1955, Montana was probably one of the most densely populated union towns per capita in the United States. I mean, with the lumber industry, the mining industry, the railroads, and all of those were highly unionized. So when you were bucking up against unions as a Republican, you were in pretty tough way. But the Farmers Union was then, as it is now, but then was very strong and, of course, very Democrat and very opposed to my candidacy.
Now, Orvin, did you have a farm background? When you were a kid, were you brought up on a farm?
A what?
Were you brought up on a farm?
Oh, yes, yeah. I was on a sheep ranch.
When you first thought about running for Congress, why did you run as a Republican?
Why did I run? Well, I was raised in a Republican county. I was raised in a Republican family. In 1932, when Roosevelt was elected president, every county in Montana went for Roosevelt. Sweetgrass County, my county, went for Hooper. So you could tell I was born into it.
I see. And so your family wasn't a Farmers Union family?
Oh, no, yeah. No.
And so you were bucking the Farmers Union, and they had a lot of members then and a lot of influence then?
Well, the Farmers Union didn't have much memberships in my county, but in the state of Montana, it sure did. Yeah. Particularly eastern, northern, yeah.
Do you remember any prominent leaders in the Farmers Union at that time?
Well, not really, no. I can remember them, but I can't remember their names. Yeah.
Any prominent labor leaders? Labor union leaders in Montana during that time?
Well, I can't remember their names, but I remember them, yes, yeah.
Who would you say were the four or five most influential people in Montana during your period of political involvement?
Oh, of course, Mike Mansfield, there's no question about that. I had a great... I admired Mansfield. I'll never forget in 1960 when I was running against Metcalf for the Senate. We were looking in pretty good shape there towards the end of the campaign, and Mansfield had not been involved much until it became kind of apparent that we might win it. Then Mansfield came out and he said, "I need Lee," and that's all. It's Lee Metcalf. I need Lee, and that made a difference, no question about it. Yeah, and then, of course, Hugo Aronson, the governor, he was an impressive person. And in the Congress, Charlie Halleck from Indiana, and I mentioned Sam Rayburn, Joe Martin from Massachusetts, former speaker. They were all people that... a very impressive job. The reason I got to know Jerry Ford and Dick Nixon, when I first went into Congress, I was invited, as every member of Congress when he's elected is invited to join a lot of associations and organizations, most of which are social. But I got one that it was called for the Chowder and Marching Society. Well, that sounded to me like a bunch of playboys with a lot of money and threw it in the waste paper basket. And later, Jerry Ford was one of them. Jackson from California came around and wanted to know why I hadn't answered their suggestion that I join the Chowder and Marching Club. Well, they explained what it was. It was about 12 members of Congress who had formed this association back in the days when Nixon and Jerry Ford and to name two of many of Jackson, it got together as 12 of these to stop a piece of legislation, and they thought, well, if they could do it once, perhaps we'll need to do it again. They said they had this little organization. And it became very, very, very influential. I can't remember all the names, but a lot of them were Secretary of State. What was his name? Became Secretary of State. I can't think of it now. But anyway, very influential. But I got to know Nixon and Ford very well on a first-name basis. Right.
Because they were both members of that society.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct, yeah. We meet once a week. And
that's quite an honor to have been in.
Well, it was. It really was, yeah. Jim Batten, who later became congressman, he became a member of the society. But that were the only two that Montana's ever been part of.
And it's strictly a Republican group?
Yeah, strictly Republican, yeah. Yeah, we had, Sigrid and I had dinner in the White House four times, yeah.
So you met President Eisenhower personally?
Oh, yeah, but not as well as Nixon.
Yeah.
Now,
if I asked you in a few words to describe Eisenhower, what would you say?
Oh, he was... what would I say? A very diplomatic man, strong, very honest. There's no question about his honesty. He would break that. And a very likable person.
How would you describe Nixon?
Extremely ambitious. A very talented man. I mean, particularly in foreign affairs, he was and he was a victim, as sometimes in the political circus we say, from my enemies I can myself defend, but heaven protect me from a well-meaning friend. And Nixon was a victim of some awfully well-meaning friends. Of course, I owe Nixon a lot, as I do also Tim Babcock, governor. But Nixon appointed me to the Federal Housing Administration. And so I'm indebted to him on a personal basis, but he was a fiercely ambitious man.
Did that come across in your personal, when you knew him personally? I mean,
Did
that ambition come through?
Yes, very so. Yeah. But talented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he friendly?
Yes.
Interesting conversationalist?
Man to man.
Yeah.
Terrific. Yeah. Yeah.
Look you in the eye?
Yep. Yep.
Did you ever have a visit like that with Eisenhower?
No. No. I'll never forget one time I think there's 12 members of Congress are invited to have breakfast with the president on a totally friendly basis. No politics to be talked. And I got to sit right across the street, the table from him at the White House, had a breakfast, and listen to him and we'd talk about, he talked like a soldier, his language get a little salty. But
you know, Orvin, I talked with Tim Babcock about General Eisenhower, and he
right.
made the same comment.
Yeah.
He said that Eisenhower could sometimes talk a little bit like a soldier.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So you ran for the U.S. Senate in 1960.
How's that?
You ran for the U.S. Senate in 1960.
Right. Steve Murray decided not to run. So I got involved in the primaries again with several others, Wayne Montgomery, what was his name?
Well, Wes Dewart, didn't he run?
No.
Oh, Dewart didn't run in the primary in 60? I was thinking he did, okay.
No, he ran against Murray and lost in a delayed count, yeah.
Yeah.
Then Dewart went back and was in the highway department or agricultural department under Eisenhower.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you narrowly lost in 1960. You narrowly lost in 1960, and then you were involved in Babcock's campaigns, weren't you?
Yeah. In 1962, Don Netter was killed, as you know, and Babcock became governor. And he then, Governor Babcock, gave me a job with the Highway Department as Tourist Promotion Director. State Advertising Director was called the Tourist Promotion Director. Best job I've ever had in my life. You know, selling Montana Vacation and Recreation Resources was a good job. And that would be 1962. In 1964, Babcock had to be run to be reelected, so I was his campaign manager for about 5 months, the summer of 64. When I was working for the Highway Department, I quit the Highway Department, went to work for Babcock as his campaign manager, and got him elected in 1964. Just a sec.
Oh my, yeah. That's wonderful. This is a wooden carving of an elephant, and it says to Orvin, from your winning win with Tim Team, 1964.
Yeah.
So you headed up the win with Tim Team in 1964?
Correct, yeah.
Were you the chairman of the Tim Babcock committee?
I was campaign director, yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Campaign manager.
And that was the race against Roland Rennie.
Correct.
What do you remember about that campaign?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was just a lot of fun, and he was a good candidate.
Babcock was?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were there any issues that you can remember?
In
Babcock's campaign for governor in 1964.
Not per se, no. I would. I can't remember the issues that. No.
Are there any events, Orvin? Are there any things that you were involved in your life that are especially memorable that you need to talk about?
That's what?
Anything that you'd particularly like to talk about in your life in politics or I guess otherwise?
Well,
a memory or an incident or something that stands out in your mind that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I don't, not really. I think the fact that I was able to serve in Congress was a big honor. And working for the state of Montana as Tourist Promotion Director, and the years, it was about 8 years with the Federal Housing Administration. That was a very...
Were you back in Washington, D.C. then, or in Montana?
No, in Montana. It was for the state of Montana, Federal Housing Administration. I was lived here in Helena.
Did the thought ever occur to you to run for public office again?
What was that?
Did you ever think about running for public office again after 1960?
No, never again. I took the cure. Yeah, and then when I retired, I went back to Big Timber and got involved in building miniatures, and I've had a very complete and a very interesting life.
And the miniatures that you mentioned are these wonderful dollhouses and the wonderful furniture within them that you've become famous for, actually. Remarkable workmanship.
We were very successful and a very enjoyable experience, right.
Now, one thing I want to just bring up again, because I'm intrigued about it, was this woman on your staff from Cascade, Montana, who was more loyal to the Anaconda Company than she was to you. Was there a particular incident that brought that to your attention?
Not really, no. No, it was just a feeling that she was not loyal to me. She was answering to somebody else.
That wasn't just based on a hunch, though. You must have had some reason for thinking that.
Well, I can't... I can't do that. I just knew that loyalty was not there.
And she didn't deny it when you confronted her?
No.
No. Now, you mentioned Governor Aronson. Any thoughts or observations about him?
Oh, yeah, he was a delightful person. He, again, was a very honest person. I don't know, I just enjoyed being with him, and working with him.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, I think that's probably be 1,000 things that I'll think of after you're gone, but I think not.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your public service to the state of Montana.
Thank you.